Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 4, The Process of Creation. Text number 25. Ittha divadma buddhajan dhaladaya vipritchate viragarbha vyadat shakshad yadaha hari atmana.
On this matter.
Eva,
exactly.
Atmavu,
the firstborn.
Brahmaji.
Rajan,
my dear king.
Naradaya,
unto Narada Muni.
Vipritchate,
having inquired about it from.
Vedagarbha,
one who is impregnated with Vedic knowledge from birth.
Abhyadat,
apprised.
Shakshat,
directly.
Yattaha,
what he spoke.
Hari,
the Lord.
Atmana,
under his own Brahma. Translation. My dear king, Brahma, the firstborn, on being questioned by Narada, exactly apprised him on this subject, as it was directly spoken by the Lord to his own son, who was impregnated with Vedic knowledge from his very birth. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As soon as Brahma was born of the abdominal lotus petals of Vishnu, he was impregnated with Vedic knowledge, and therefore he is known as Veda Garbha, or a Vedantist from the embryo. Without Vedic knowledge, or perfect infallible knowledge, no one can create anything. All scientific knowledge and perfect knowledge are Vedic. One can get all types of information from the Vedas, and as such, Brahma was impregnated with all perfect knowledge so that it was possible for him to create. Thus, Brahma knew the perfect description of creation, as it was exactly apprised to him by the Supreme Lord Hari. Brahma, on being questioned by Narad, told Narad exactly what he had heard directly from the Lord. Narad again told exactly the same thing to Vyas, and Vyas also told Sukadev exactly what he heard from Narad. And Sukadev was going to repeat the same statements as he had heard them from Vyas. This is the way of Vedic understanding. The language of the Vedas can be revealed only by the above mentioned disciplic succession and not otherwise. There is no use in theories. Knowledge must be factual. There are many things that are complicated and one cannot understand them unless they are explained by one who knows. The Vedic knowledge is also very difficult to know and must be learned by the above mentioned system, otherwise it is not at all understood. Sukadeva Goswami therefore prayed for the mercy of the Lord so that he might be able to repeat the very same message that was spoken directly by the Lord to Brahma, or what was directly spoken by Brahma to Narad. Therefore, the statements of creation explained by Sukadeva Goswami are not at all, as the mundanist suggests, theoretical, but are perfectly correct. And one who hears these messages and tries to assimilate them gets perfect information of the material creation. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the second canto, fourth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Process of Creation. I'll just read the verse again. Itam yivatma bhurajan naradaya vipritchate vedikarbo vyadat shakshad ya iha hari atmana madikin. Brahma, the firstborn, on being questioned by Narad, exactly apprised him on this subject as it was directly spoken by the Lord to his own son, who was impregnated with Vedic knowledge from his very birth. So here, Sukadeva Goswami, speaking to Parikshit Maharaj, after offering some very wonderful prayers to Lord Krishna, is going to answer Parikshit Maharaj's questions. Parikshit Maharaj asked some questions in the beginning of this chapter about the process of creation. And Sukadeva Goswami, first of all, as Prabhupada puts it here, Sukadeva Goswami therefore prayed for the mercy of the Lord so that he might be able to repeat the very same message that was spoken directly by the Lord to Brahma, or what was directly spoken by Brahma to Narad. It would seem to people in material consciousness that is an unusual prayer. These prayers by Sukadeva Goswami, very, very beautiful prayers. Very, very, very thoughtful, offered with the greatest love and respect for Lord Sri Krishna. And you expect that when someone is offering such intense prayers, that one is going to do something very great. But from a mundane perspective, if you're just praying, let me just repeat what they have said. You would hardly think that it would even warrant a prayer. Let me just say what they have said. And that's easy enough. But, of course, we see here from Sukadeva Goswami that without the mercy of the Lord, that is actually an activity. It is only an activity of one who is completely under the spiritual shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, it is something that cannot be done. So how is it, we may ask, how is it that such a simple thing to, follow or to repeat something which has, already been done by someone else, why is that so difficult? Why is that almost impossible, or is impossible for people who don't have the mercy of the Lord? It is the very nature of the conditioned soul, because after all, everyone that comes to the material world becomes conditioned by the material energy, and becoming conditioned, we think that we are independent. So there's that verse Prabhupada quotes in this regard in the third chapter. Who knows that verse? Who knows the verse in the end? What's that? Prakriti Kriyamana. Prakriti Kriyamana. Yep. Translation?
Polluted by the three modes of material nature, the spirit soul thinks that he is a doer while everything is done by other. Under the influence of three, he thinks himself as a doer while everything is carried out by the three modes.
Yes, yes. That's exactly right. That's the spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. Prabhupada mentions in the purport, the person in false ego takes all credit for doing everything independently, and that is a symptom of his nescience. So, this is the symptom of someone under the material energy, is that they actually think that they're doing things independently, and they like to take credit for that independence. It's the very heart of why we come to the material world, because we wanted to act independently from Krishna. Of course, everyone in the spiritual world is happily serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the center of all loving relationships. But, as described in the seventh chapter, overcome by envy or, hatred and desire, the independent desire from Krishna, we all take birth in this material world. So it's the very reason we come here. We come here with that strong desire, there within the heart. So our very nature is to be independent from God. That independence from God manifests, as being independent in all our relationships. Just like it describes by Sukadeva Goswami in the 10th canto, that, when I think Brigit Maharaj was asking Sukadeva Goswami, how is it that, when the cowherd boys and calves were taken away by Brahma in the Brahma Vimohana Lila, where Brahma becomes bewildered, how is it that Krishna manifested the forms of all those calves and cowherd boys, that they were so attracted to those forms which were Krishna, even more so than their other relatives or themselves or anything? And Sukadeva Goswami very scientifically points out that the process that we are attached to, relatives, wife, children, home, possessions, because they give pleasure to the body. So really we're attached to the body. It appears that we're attached to so many other things, but actually we're attached to the body, and therefore these things we become attached to. The real attachment is for the body. But of course, what is our attachment to the body is because the soul is there. It's when the soul leaves, there is no attachment for the body by anyone. Prabhupada, on that, he gives an analogy of the temple. We all come here because Krishna is here, Krishna and his devotees. But if it was an empty building, without Krishna, without the devotees, would we be coming here every single day and spending every day here? We wouldn't. Because, Krishna is there. The body, because the occupant, the soul is in the body, we become attached to the body. So the real attachment is not even the body, but the soul. And actually the soul is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. So because Krishna is the all-attractive Supreme Personality of God, and we're part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Ultimately, we're attracted to, you know, the soul, attached to the soul, because it's actually part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. So ultimately, our attraction is to Krishna. So it's natural. That's what Sukadeva Goswami was explaining. So you can then go converse, that envy begins from Krishna and spreads out to all other relationships, you know, in the reverse, like that. We become, you know, envious of, you know, this one and that one, or, you know, think, well, we're independent from this one and that one. We're independent from Krishna, and that will manifest in our relationships with all other living entities, because ultimately it stems from Krishna, our relationship with Krishna. So it's the very nature of the conditioned soul to, you know, consider themselves as ultimately, because of the envy of Krishna, to always be acting in an independent way, giving all credit to oneself. Prabhupada mentions that in the purport of that Bhagavad Gita. That he quite often mentions this, you know, in regard to materialistic people's relationship with God. You know, if the scientists do something, you know, Columbus discovered America, you know, this one discovered this one discovered that. You know, they're very, very keen, just take, you know, immediately they'll name some discovery after, you know, themselves. But anything that goes right in their eyes, immediately they'll seize upon the credit. And if something goes wrong, you know, there's some problem in the world, that's God's fault. I mean, it's obvious, isn't it? You know, if there's any credit to be taken, I want my name attached to that. And if there's some problem, fie on you. So, this simple principle in Krishna consciousness of, you know, accepting what previous devotees have done and said goes against the nature of a conditioned soul, to act independently and to accept credit for oneself and not to give that credit or to, you know, to others, that, oh, I'm dependent upon that person. That person dependent on that person means that person ultimately gets the credit. Just like I explained to people that when we do the, you know, a hair cutting ceremony, we're actually asking the Lord to do the hair cutting. He's doing the ceremony, he's doing the hair cutting, and the Brahmin and the barber, in my case both, more like a barber than a Brahmin, but anyway, speaking of barbers, I had a haircut. But, you know, it's actually Krishna who does it. And we ask the Lord, you know, and that's why they become purified. They're not getting purified because Ganga gave him a haircut. You know, there's some purification, but they're associated with Krishna, you know, through that whole process. And then, you know, the other day I said to someone, I picked up the scissors and I said, here are the scissors. Who is cutting the hair, the scissors or me? And he said, the scissors. I said, no. You know, no, because, you know, so I put the scissors on the ground and I said, come on, scissors, get up and do the hair cutting. And we all waited and we waited and the scissors didn't move. Like that. So, you know, it was myself, but even myself, I'm an instrument in the hands of Krishna, coming through disciplic succession. And that's what Krishna said to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. He said, you know, you, Arjuna, you'd be an instrument. I've already done everything. I've already, you know, all these people are already killed. You know, you can be an instrument. Like that. So, of course, you know, there is You know, that's one of the... A devotee has to come to terms with that. They have to act in such a way as if I am the doer. They have to act like that. They can't sit back and, you know, oh, Krishna's the doer. I'll just sit here and wait. And, you know, it's like Prabhupada says it. You know, Krishna never said to Arjun, you know, just lie down here, Arjun, on the chariot, maybe smoke some ganja, what have you. You know, I'll take care of everything. You know, Arjun had to act as if he was the doer. But he had to always, you know, understand, no, I'm not the doer. Krishna has already done this. I am but an instrument in the hands of Krishna. So, you know, it takes some deep thought. Therefore, as Prabhupada says here, you know, this subject matter of Krishna consciousness is very, very difficult to understand, and it's not possible because there appear to be so many things that don't make sense materially. They appear to be contradictions. They appear to be opposing elements, but in Krishna consciousness, things go on by a spiritual process. Prabhupada mentions here, you know, that we understand this process of creation by, you know, the process mentioned here. It's a process of understanding at that, and that understanding begins with we see Sukadeva Goswami praying to the Lord for that ability to just repeat, to understand, and to repeat what he has heard. So, you know, that tendency of you know, independence and envy. You know, there are some examples in Shastra which you know, are quite... They're always very difficult to understand. Just like here, we're taking Brahma as the ultimate authority. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada's disciples would even write letters to Prabhupada, you know, is Brahma a pure devotee? And, you know, like, you know, because they may have read, you know, that Brahma did this, and, you know, there's some, you know, anomaly here and there. And Prabhupada was very quick to, you know, strongly chastise and remove that mentality. You know, why not? You know, why is Brahma not a pure devotee? You know, who is challenging? who is challenging? Here it describes. Just like I was hearing a lecture the other day. Actually, my wife was hearing a lecture. She told me that. But where, you know, sometimes, you know, we, you know, quite often admire, you know, our God brothers and, you know, that, you know, who is your spiritual master? We think, oh, you're getting such good training. We think of someone else's, oh, you know, you're getting such good training. We think everyone is getting this, you know, wonderful training. Who's Brahma's spiritual master? Krishna. Imagine the training, you know, from the very beginning. And of course, he didn't start when he was 30 years old. Brahma's about 50 now. But he started from, as an, you know, from the very beginning. From the very beginning, he was... So, you know, over 50 years, in Brahma's terms, he's been practicing what his guru has taught. You know, who he has been a devotee for 50 years, in Brahma's terms. So, you know, do we question, you know, is he a pure devotee? One time, another devotee questioned, you know, what about Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Wasn't he an impersonalist like this? Because Prabhupada, again, you know, very quick to chastise and smash this nonsense, you know. What is this nonsense? But he gave this example that... he says, in the beginning your mother was naked. Does that mean now she should also be naked? So in the beginning, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's position was like this. What is this nonsense that we always view that person in that way? And You know, that tendency, of course, you know, when there's a little bit of, because we're conditioned souls, we have that envy, it comes out in different ways. It's like when I was on the farm, we didn't have a lot of people there, and somehow or another I'd amassed some money, a few thousand dollars to, you know, the dam wall, you know, the big dam where you have the big gully. Massive amounts of water. I mean, it comes down there, especially when you get these big inundations like we've had lately. I mean, there were concrete culverts, you know, about 10 feet high, you know, just massive big culverts. And water used to just pick them up, smash the wall to pieces, and just throw those culverts weighing so many tons and just smash them to pieces. You can just imagine the strength. So I saw the the people who lived, you know, near us, forget their names, but that, you know, they're sort of families of generations of farmers and, you know, people who sort of, Armisteads, very well respected, you know, as people who know, you know, how to live and work in the country. They have big machinery and whatever. So they, I paid them to fix that damn wall. And they suggested that the best thing was, instead of having, you know, the big culverts, that they, you know, level it off, they fix the wall up, level it off in such a way, and then grass it over so that the water just trickles over the top, you know, and which seemed to have worked. But when we first put it in, there was a point where you had to wait for the grass to grow a little bit, you know, otherwise it was just sort of dirt, muddy, you know, dirt. So we got a big rain, which put a gouge. It was only about, you know, say a foot wide and maybe a foot deep, but it put a gouge there. But the problem was, left untouched, it would turn into, with the amount of water that goes through, that would just, you know, take the whole wall away. So I went and asked him what to do. And he said, you get some hay bales, the square ones, and you put them there and you stake them in with some stakes like that. And that will, you know, the water will hit those hay bales and it will just soften the blow. You know. So I had my nephew and another helper, trying hard to be a devotee, who was a very independent person. He was one of those persons who always wanted to take, you know, credit like that. And of course, my nephew, you know, for him, I'm his uncle. He doesn't see me as a devotee or, you know, or anything. He's just, you know, his uncle, Uncle Danny. So I said to them, you know, take the hay bales, drive them down in the tractor because you'll need plenty of them. Stop the tractor just before the wall because it's only just been put in. It'd be very wet. You can't drive the tractor over it. And walk them over one by one, just the square hay bales like that. So of course they got down there and they thought, well, you know, what's my uncle know, you know? What, he's not a farmer, which I'm not. You know. He's not, you know, what does he know? And they decided between the two of them, let's just, you know, he's going to get us to walk each bale across. We just drive the tractor and drive the whole lot over and we'll save ourselves, you know, an hour's work. So, of course, they started driving the tractor, you know, over the damn wall. And immediately, you know how big tractor wheels are, they're, you know, as wide as this sauna. And it immediately started sinking, you know, two wheels. So they were putting, to fix a gouge, which is about, you know, a foot wide and a foot deep, they created a gouge which is two sets of 3 foot wide and about 3 foot deep, you know. And then they realised, immediately they started, oh, we're in trouble, so we have to get off here. So, of course, you know, you know, because they were sinking so quickly, you really have to keep your momentum and go forward. You can't stop and go back. So they did this big fishtail, and you know, which covered the whole length of the damn wall, and then finally got off. And then they come and saw me. Oh, you know, Ganga, Uncle Danny. We got a problem, you know. So I went down and I had a look at that damn wall. And, of course, there was this gouges, you know, just meters wide and meters deep in the new damn wall to fix, you know, a little thing like that. So I said, well, now the only way you're going to be able to fix that is by shovel. And I gave them two shovels, a shovel each, and they had to repair it. So you see, it's actually quite good. They spent, maybe a couple of days repairing that with shovels. Imagine how much work it cost them, how much disaster, you know, caused. But, you know, I understood, you know, I can sort of understand, well, you know, why would, you know, your nephew, you know, just, you know, think that you're something special, or, you know, why would a young devotee who's, you know, trying to make their name for themselves in Krishna conscious circles, you know, listen to, you know, an old fuddy-duddy devotee like that. So I could sort of understand it, but they did learn a very hard lesson. I was very fortunate in one sense when I came to Krishna consciousness, because I always knew very clearly that I had no qualification. I had no education properly, and I had no skills, and I didn't know anything about Krishna consciousness. And I always understood that in the long run, when I look back, that has been my strength, because I always try to therefore understand that what should I do? Let me look at Prabhupada's, you know, books really carefully, because I don't know what I'm doing. I didn't come to this movement with some, you know, big experience of qualification. So let me just, you know, I've come here with a clean slate. Let me just find out, you know, if it comes to eating, or, you know, going to the toilet, or, you know, speaking or anything, I don't know what I'm doing. Let me find out what the authorities do like that. So in the long run, that, and you know, that is, then, you know, when I heard Prabhupada speaking on the pastimes of Sanatan Goswami, you know, I understood that that's proper for all devotees, because, you know, Sanatan Goswami, he was actually a very, very qualified person. Rupa and Sanatan Goswami were extremely qualified. But, you know, when Sanatan Goswami approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he approached him in that mood, that people say I have so much qualification. You know, people call me a pundit. They feel that I'm very learned, you know, very experienced. He was, you know, Mandalapati. They were like the center of very great and learned persons, you know, in many, many fields. They were the, you know, the prime ministers for the Nawab, who were running the whole, you know, regime. So they're very, very... But he's saying, people give me this credit, but myself, I understand I have no qualification. What is my qualification? I don't even know who I am. You know, I'm thinking I'm this body, and this body is suffering from threefold miseries, and I don't know how to stop that. Like that. So Prabhupada mentions in that regard that this is the proper mood for devotees to actually make advancement in Krishna consciousness as a, you know, as a clean slate. Therefore, if we can follow in the footsteps of Sanatan Goswami, Prabhupada also said, you know, Prabhupada, when he, when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati the core was, people had been put forward for initiation, and you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati was, you know, seeing the different people, and then when it came to Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, yes, I have marked him, he likes to hear. This is his qualification. Prabhupada said, that was my only qualification. And that was the qualification that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he likes to hear. He's going to hear what the previous authorities in Krishna consciousness giving so much transcendental knowledge, and he likes to hear that. He has the best qualification for taking initiation, for becoming a disciple like this. And he had full confidence in Srila Prabhupada that this qualification, above all other things, makes a person qualified as a devotee to be able to hear. And it means that that person, of course, is... it shows, that they're not conditioned by the modes of material nature, thinking oneself to be independent and what have you. We can... I've learned to accept that, certainly, for ordinary persons like myself, who even after 35 years have no real qualification as a devotee, it's not unusual, to expect that people may not, take notice of instruction. Just like, I don't know how many times I've mentioned to devotees they shouldn't sit with their back towards, the deities, and still, they would do it. I say that because I heard Prabhupada say it, in his lectures, and it's in his books, that one should not do that. In fact, even coming this morning, I was hearing that again. Prabhupada, there was a young child sitting, listening to Prabhupada's lectures with everyone, and Prabhupada said, that child is sitting with his back towards the deities, you should train them properly from the very beginning. It's not correct at that. He didn't say, oh, it's just a child, he doesn't know, let's let it go. It was a little child, and the parent should... He stopped his lecture to mention this point. You go through Prabhupada's lectures, there's thousands of them, you see how many times Prabhupada stops a lecture like that. They're very rare. Whatever's going on, he doesn't. He stopped the lecture to make this point, you don't, and for a child who's just innocent sitting. It means something to Prabhupada. But still, we see in our philosophy that so deep rooted is this nature to be somewhat independent that we have, as conditioned souls, that even very, very elevated devotees, have this tendency still. There are some stories which are just quite stunning. There's like the story of Rishikananda, and his spiritual master said, "When I leave my body, you ask my three wives, who will need to be maintained by the society of devotees, you ask them to come and live together in one house and to cooperate and worship this particular deity, Vrindavan Chandra, together, cooperatively." So he wanted that. It was good for their Krishna consciousness. He didn't want them. He didn't want the devotees that to be spending massive amounts of money to be maintaining the whims of his wives, all living in big houses, all separately like that. He wanted that you live together cooperatively in the one place and worship the deity in that place. That is the main deity. One of the wives in particular, after Shyamananda Prabhu left, she didn't like that, and she didn't want that, and conspired, we read this in the pastimes of Rishikananda, conspired that we'll write a note that in Rishikananda's, we'll make it look like Rishikananda has given this order, cause harm by poisoning, one of the wives, and we'll, in that way we'll undermine his authority, and then we can, do as we please, like that. These sort of shocking examples that, here, devotees who are in, so much opportunity, even in very, very elevated circumstances. And we see Ramchandra Puri also, who was, a sannyasi, a disciple of Madhavendra Puri, and when Madhavendra Puri was leaving his body, Ramchandra Puri criticized his own spiritual master, this is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, while he was, practically he's on the verge of leaving his body, and the disciple is criticizing his guru, you're lamenting like a materialist. It's sort of inconceivable. It's still, even though it's hard to imagine, but it shows the extent how far this deep-rooted, propensity goes. Therefore, of course, we shouldn't be surprised that, we have this propensity in ourselves, and we shouldn't be surprised that, when sometimes our peers or even, new devotees manifest, these sort of symptoms. It's there, it's there. We shouldn't be surprised. But still, we should be very, very careful that if we actually want to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, that tendency to, follow, to give credit to the previous acharyas, their teachings, their example, particularly Srila Prabhupada and his representatives teach us how to follow very closely his mood and mission. If we can, hear and learn and repeat and follow that example by putting aside our own pride that we have some better way of doing things, we can advance in Krishna consciousness very, very rapidly. This is the secret, shown by... And to do that, it's not such an easy thing. We should pray like Sukadeva Goswami. We should pray, please give me that ability. Because it's not ordinary. It's not an ordinary ability. But you please give me that ability to put aside my conditioned nature, this nature to be independent, to be a little bit envious and fault-finding, and give me that ability that, if devotees have had some successes by following Srila Prabhupada, let me, repeat what they're doing like that. Not that I'm trying to act in such a way that I am highlighting my own qualifications, because the problem is when you follow someone else's example, you're glorifying them, and that's that's the hard part of it. If we want ourselves to be glorified, that's the hard part. But if we do that, your success in Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. Therefore, sometimes when devotees take initiation, they'll usually come and ask me some advice, probably because I've been around. As Jayananda says, when you're around, sometimes people offer you respect despite whatever your qualifications. But I say to them, if there's any one advice I give you, this humble attitude to come and ask a senior devotee, even myself, some advice of how to advance in Krishna consciousness, if you can have that same mood in 30 years' time, that's my advice. If you can maintain that mood, not that, 1 year after initiation, I no longer listen to anyone, except there's a couple of devotees I've listened to and the rest of them, Ridananda Maharaj once gave a class on this. He said, previously I was a neophyte. He said, I was humble, I would never, speak any criticism or gossip about devotees. I had a lot of faith in devotees and, I was very respectful and, always trying to serve them. Because now I'm making advancement, I don't do any of that, I just sort of independently go about things and I can see all their faults because I've matured in my knowledge, and therefore, I don't sort of show them any respect or, like that. So he sort of gave a parody. It was quite funny, but, it's actually, he noticed that's what happens, even in Krishna consciousness. And so we should guard against that. Anyway, we can learn this from Sukadeva Goswami. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments.
That sounds
right. Yeah, it's true. Because in the spiritual world, of course, Titila is always seeing some faults in Radharani. But, in the spiritual world, there's no We were reading this in the fourth canto in relationship to Prithvi Maharaj, who was praying that Lakshmi wouldn't be offended with his service of trying to worship the Lord's lotus feet. And Prabhupada mentions in the purport, you know, there's envy, but it's without malice. There's not even trace. So even Jatila, who's always seen the fault in Radharani, it's hard for us to understand because we only know the brand of envy that has malice. But in the spiritual world, there's not even the trace of malice. It is all done out of love, you know, to increase the rasa. So that takes some very deep meditation. It's not something, and to understand that, we need to pray like Sukadeva Goswami to, you know, let Krishna help us to understand these things. Therefore, you know, Jiva Goswami, when he tried to, when the Digvijaya came to defeat Rupa and Sanatan in debate, and they said, you know, because there's no envy, yes, you want to be known as a greater scholar than me, well, you know, yeah, sure, you know, there's no envy, no, you shall not be known as bigger, yeah, you can, yes, you tell everyone you defeated. No, no, they will not believe. Oh, here it is in writing. You know, there's no envy. Jiva Goswami, he overheard, he was angry. You know, that they have belittled the acharyas like that, found some fault, diminished their position. So he defeated that Digvijaya. Then Rupa Goswami, he banned him. There's no place in Vrindavan for this envy and pride. You have to leave. Just to, and when Prabhupada lived at Radha Damodar, Babaji was asking him this, I don't understand this, you know, how, you know, Jiva Goswami was chastised like this. And Prabhupada explained, because Rupa Goswami was explaining through Jiva Goswami the instruction which is meant for us. You know, and Jiva Goswami was so non-envious that he was prepared to, you know, accept that full blame so that we could receive that instruction. And similarly, Arjuna accepted chastisement by Krishna so that we could be chastised. You nonsense, you give up all your rascaldom and you surrender unto me. That instruction is actually meant for us. But Arjuna, so, you know, loving and compassionate towards us, he accepted that on our behalf. But the point is that Rupa Goswami was making such a strong point that there is no place in Vrindavan or in the spiritual world for this envy and pride. Very, very strong. All right, we'll just leave it there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.